Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present.
What?
Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut. Took off his blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, what's going on? It's your boy TP Thomas back in the building. The brunch is back. We've been on a little hiatus for a little bit, but we know the month of the birds are about to kick off. We got about, I'm going to say 3 more days until we get in it. The caller number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded for the next 58 minutes or more. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with us. There's a lot of things going on, especially with NFL preseason. The MLB season coming to a close within a month or so. These races are getting pretty interesting. We got a lot of drama in certain instances. There, you know, I want to cover it because it's a little controversial as well. There's another story also in college sports that I know won't get any legs, but it definitely needs to be looked upon. I hope I can cover as much of that as possible. But again, like I said, we are going to try and fit this in within an hour while we're coming to a close on the month of August. First and foremost, I do want to get the baseball situation out of the way because this is pretty much an interesting situation. As the start of the year, a lot of teams went off on a hot run, and it started to formulate as, you know, things started to, like, I don't really want to say calm down, but people started to find their legs, so on and so forth. These divisions are kind of interesting now, while it looked like some of these forefront runners were looking like they were off and running by themselves, in which I can't even really, like, save the best for last anymore, because I'm going to just do this as I see it in sequence. The American League East, we have the Yankees still in the lead, 78-49. They are up by 8.5 in front of Tampa Bay. The Rays have actually turned this thing around and made it an interesting run. You also have the Toronto Blue Jays that are right behind them. It's 68-57, 9 games back. The Orioles have turned this thing around where I made this seem like I didn't think that they would have this type of season at the end of the day. They're 67-59, went on an incredible run, and they're 10.5 back. And the Red Sox are in last place in the division, 62-65, 16 games back. The Central is being led by the Guardians. The Guardians are now 67-58. The Twins are 64-61, 3 games back from the Guardians. The White Sox are 63-64, 5 games back. The Royals are 51-77, 17.5 back. And the Tigers are 49-78, 19 games back. The AL West is being led by the Astros, who are on an interesting run. The best team in the American League at this point in time, 81-47. They are ahead of the Mariners by 11.5 games. The Mariners are now 69-58. The Texas Rangers are 58-68, 22 games back. The Angels are 54-73, 26.5 games back. And the Oakland A's are 47-81, 34 games back. This is looking – well, they're definitely looking like the worst team in the AL. I don't like how – from the Rangers down, they're not even competitive. I really feel bad about the Angels because At the same time, Trout has been out. He's making his way back and has been incredible at the plate in the past couple of appearances. They are so severely back, and all the money that they put into him, I don't think he'll ever leave the Angels because he's a loyal player and somebody that I personally like at, you know, as an outfielder and what he does at the plate. But what can the Angels do after every star player that they get, they throw a ton of money to and doesn't formulate? And also with Shohei Ohtani, one of the phenoms of the league, the outstanding defensive player that he is, and also he's a threat at the plate, swinging a bat. So when it's his turn to get paid, what does he do? Does he stay in Anaheim or Los Angeles, however we look at this, or does he go to a team that can handle him and also make a better situation for another team across the league, not just the American League, but also in the National League as well? So I think, again, I think Trout is more or less stuck unless the team is really ready to bite and make an interesting ploy at the Angels, which I doubt, because he's been injury-riddled, I want to say, for the past 3 to 5 seasons. It's within that realm of how great of a player he is, and he hasn't been able to be available for the Angels. And Shohei, he has to see this monster happening with this organization that hasn't really been able to get out of their own way, and they haven't been able to put pieces on this Angel team also. But they're 26.5 games back. I don't see any turnaround in the next coming year unless they could get a pitching staff that resonates to this situation. I doubt it, though. But we'll see, because I can't read the future, but this is how it looks at this point in time. The National League East, the Mets are 82-46 ahead of everything, moving except the Dodgers, but we'll get there. Let me slow myself down. 82-46 in the NL East. The Atlanta Braves are 79-49. They're 3 games back. The Phillies are 72-55, 9.5 back, and they just welcomed back Bryce Harper too. And Bryce Harper's actually been having a good start in rehab, and also helped them recently as he got back to this roster also. So this is going to be interesting to see if the Phillies can make a run at it. They're back away, so I don't know if they can make this happen. We will see. The Marlins are 55-71, 26 games back, and the Washington Nationals are 42-85, 39.5 games back. It's incredible. The St. Louis Cardinals in the NL Central are 73 games won, 54 games lost, leading the Central at this point in time. The Brewers are 66-59, 6 games back. The Cubs are 55-72, 18 games back, and the Reds have slowly creeped up to make it better than what it looked before at 50-75, 22 games back, and the Pirates are 47-79, 25.5 games back. At one point, I thought the Reds were going to be the worst team in that division. They slowly turned this thing around, and I can't even say turned it around, but actually gained ground. I can say that. I don't want to say turn it around, but gained ground to not being last place. The Pirates are carrying that right now. I don't know what the Pirates are going to be able to do. With all of the disarray and the players coming in and out of that organization, they haven't really been able to build any stability to make the Pirates a consistent threat. It's tough, especially in the Central, because the Central's loaded. Even if the Cubs turn this thing around, it's at least the Cubs in front of them. The Brewers are still a threat year in and year out, and the Cardinals are phenomenal playing baseball at this point in time. In the NL West, you have the Dodgers leading the pack, 87-38, they are the best team in the major league right now. The San Diego Padres are 70-58, 18.5 back. The Giants are 61-64, 26 games back. And the Diamondbacks are 50-67, 29 games back. And the Rockies are 54-74, 34.5 games back. This is stunning to see how good the Dodgers are being consistent year after year, especially at this point in time. They have 38 losses. They look like they are going to have probably, I want to be fair with a number. We have September coming up. I think they can get 110 wins. I want to be fair. So that'll be 110-52. I feel like that's fair. If they lose 14 games from now until the end of September, that'll be the 52 games. Unless they go on some bad losing streak and makes it worse, I think the Dodgers can clearly make this an incredible season if they keep it together and stay away from that bug. And that bug has been able to trip people up, so on and so forth. So let me move into the scores that we have as of yesterday. And it's funny that I brought up the Giants situation too, because my boys played them, and we need to go on some type of run right now. But it's been interesting that they've been putting up runs in portions of these games now while they were just on a 6-game losing streak. I don't even want to get into that because I could talk about the Twins for hours. I really can. The Angels won yesterday, though. Even though I just was talking junk about them, they beat the Blue Jays in Toronto 2-0. Shohei wins the bout. He's 11-8 on the season with a 2.67 ERA. And Manoah loses this one 12-7 on the season with a 2.6 ERA. Herger gets the save. The Red Sox win their matchup up against the Rays in Boston 5-1. Hill wins his game, and this is his sixth win to get away from the 500 situation. He's 4.32 on his ERA, and Springs is a losing pitcher, and he goes 6-4 on the season with 2.76 as an ERA. The Pirates lose their matchup to the Phillies 6-0. They get shut out in Philadelphia. Kyle Gibson, the former Ranger and Twin, he's 9-5 on the season, and Bede wins. He loses, excuse me, he's 1-4 on the season. The Dodgers lose on the road to the Marlins 2-1. Alcantara gets his 12th win on the season. He's 12-6, 2.13 ERA, and D-May wins. Win on a losing pitcher. He loses, and he's 1-1 on the season with a 1.64 ERA. He's pitching pretty good. He's pitching pretty good for the Dodgers, though, but he loses in this situation. The Reds, they win their matchup up against the Nationals 6-2, and I spoke on how the Nationals are struggling, especially coming off a World Series win just a few years ago. But that has no effect on what's going on right now. The Reds win this game 6-2 in Washington. Gabalt wins his first win of the season. Espinoza loses. He's 0-6 on the season. Diaz gets the save. The Tigers beat the Rangers in Arlington 11-2. Rodriguez wins this matchup 3-3 on the season, 3.60 ERA. Dallas Keuchel loses. And this is stunning because this is a pitcher that I wanted at one point in time. He's 2-8 on the season with an 8.84 ERA. This is incredible that Dallas has fallen this bad. I don't know if it's because he went to Texas or the string of questionability from his move from team to team, and I don't know if the injury bug is something that's bothering him, but that's a bad record for Dallas, and it was somebody that I wanted at one point in time. The Diamondbacks win their matchup up against the White Sox in the south side of Chicago 10-5. Kelly wins his matchup, is 11-5 on the season with a 2.97 ERA, and D. Martin loses. He's 2-4 on the season with a 4.85 ERA. The Orioles beat the Astros in Houston 3-1. Kremer gets his sixth win of the season. He's 6-4, 3.24 ERA. Urquidy loses down at home, but he has a good record. He's 12-5 on the season with 3.69 ERA. The Brewers shut out the Cubs 7-0 in Milwaukee. Rogers wins. He's 2-6 on the season with a 4.38 ERA. And R. Wick is 4-7 on the season with a 4.73 ERA. The Mets win at home up against the Rockies comfortably, even though it's a 3-0 win, but they do shut them out for the 17th shutout this season. The Mets have actually been doing well. Hopefully they can carry this into the postseason with them. Peterson wins. He's 7-3 on the season, 3.21 ERA. And Freeland is 7-9 on the season in a losing effort with a 4.88 ERA. Ottavino gets the save for the Mets as well. The Padres win up against the Royals in Kansas City 4-3. An interesting one. Yu Darvish gets in his 11th win on the season. He's 11-7, 3.41 ERA, excuse me. And in a losing effort, Lynch is 4-9 on the season with a 4.7 ERA. And Martinez gets the save for the Padres. The Braves lose to the Cardinals. The Cardinals win this matchup 6-5. Helsley wins his eighth win on the season. He's 8-1. And Jansen for the Braves is 5-1, his first loss on the season. Interesting enough. The Cardinals end up scoring in the bottom of the ninth to win this one. They score two runs to come back and win this from the Braves. Like I said a little while ago, the Giants and the Twins went at it. Speaking about the San Francisco Giants being an NL West team, the Twins have to come back from behind 2-0 in the ninth. They scored two to tie it in the ninth and scored the winning run in the 10th on a walk, a bases-loaded walk to win the game. I watched this game biting my nails like, you guys have to get going. New addition to the Twins, Hamilton, scored the winning run. He just came to the team, too, so hopefully this consistency stays. And the one thing that is bothering me about the Twins is here goes Byron Buxton again, injured again, and he's on the IL for the next 10 days. hopefully the Twins could gain stride while he could get better and healthy and try to make a push at this. And they're within reason to the Guardians, but they let the Guardians catch up and take the lead. The Twins win this game 3-2. Duran gets his second win. He's 2-3 on the season out of the bullpen. Leone loses this one, and he's 4-5 on the season. The Athletics, a.k.a. the Oakland A's, win their matchup up against the Yankees in 11 innings. This is a 3-2 matchup. Late error helps the A's beat the Yankees, and this is incredible to me because I feel like the Yankees could have went into Oakland and swept them. They end up giving this game up 3-2. Payamps is the winner in this game. He's 3-3 on the season at .500. You have Trevino losing this match, and he's 2-8 on the season with a 5.14 ERA for the Yankees. And the Guardians win their matchup up against the Mariners. Seattle, I need you guys. The Guardians win 4-3. Plesac is 3-11 on the season in a winning effort, and Munoz loses. He's 2-5 on the season for the Mariners, and Class A is the closer with 30 on the season. And this wraps up at least the talk that I have for now on MLB with records across the standings and the scores that happened yesterday. But like I said, there's some interesting things that I spoke on with, you know, the Angels situation, especially while – and Ohtani did pitch and did this in Toronto too. He's incredible. We haven't seen anything like this since – well, I was – none of us were really born when Babe Ruth was out here doing this. Incredible at the plate and pitching. And Trout has been able to find his way too. Hopefully they could stay healthy together and carry this into the next season because I don't think they have to go on a massive run to at least get 500. Forget just to get in the picture to play in playoffs. But we'll see. Okay, so we do have somebody here. I wasn't even looking at the switchboard. So calling in, I have Mr. Harvey. Mr. Harvey, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling today?
Man, I'm doing well. It's always a pleasure to chop it up and you know, do brunch with you, my friend. So good to hear your voice and happy to chop it up, talk baseball and everything going on in the sporting world. How are you doing?
I just got through with the baseball situation. Is there anything that you would like to discuss that I may have missed or something that you would like to add on to? I don't know how long you were there watching or hearing it.
I've heard much of it. I got you. Yeah, well, you were doing the record. So I agree with you on those comments on the Angels. To me, one of the interesting pieces, too, is they don't really have the depth in the organization either, right? Like, so it's not like you can go get a lot of talent. There's a lack of talent throughout their whole system, and they've had a tough time putting a winning team around these guys. They started to trade some of their major league ready, or some of their, you know, they traded Iglesias to Atlanta right at the break, and got a pitcher and a couple pieces back, and so they traded Brandon Marsh, one of their young outfielders, which that one didn't make as much sense to me, to the Phillies. So they're trying to get some pieces and be creative as they possibly can. But the other thing that makes this even more intriguing is it looks like this team is going to go up for sale. I mean, the owner is trying to sell this team. So I don't know. I feel like it's kind of tough for the Angels. And then you mentioned you know, you talk about the Rangers, man. They fired the manager and the general manager this year. So that's a tough deal too. Is they just spent this money on these big contracts, and now they're trying to figure out what they're going to do there. So, you know, Seattle looking well on their way, hopefully to being able to maybe break the longest playoff drought in professional sports. You know, Seattle has gone the longest of any of the major four teams, of any of the teams in the four major sports from making the playoffs. So maybe they can finally break that this year. You mentioned Philly, man. When you were going over the National League, yeah, I don't think Philly's going to get back in that race, but they're definitely in line to be one of those, you know, one of those extra wild card teams. So they're going to be they're going to be a problem and somebody to, you know, somebody that you know, you're going to have to go see. So they're going to have to go on the road in the wild card series, but, you know, they're in line to possibly be there too, one of those three wild card teams. So, and that's a team that though with Bryce Harper back and with some of the bats that they have in that order, you got a couple of good frontline starting pitchers and Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler. So, you know, that's a team that could end up being a problem in October in the playoffs. I actually, you know, I think that so the Dodgers are playing ridiculous ball. We talked about that and how good their record is. But, man, the Phillies, Mets, and Braves all have a good bit of pitching, like a decent amount of starting pitching. And those National League East teams, we're going to see come playoff time, but I think they're going to compete pretty well against the West.
How do you feel about the West, though? Do you think the Dodgers hang on and keep this momentum going from last year into this postseason and still remain to beat the best team in baseball? Like, who's going to prove to win the National League, or is it them? Like, I feel like the Mets came out of nowhere this season and got a fire under them to have this interesting record for this year. But who is the threat in the National League that could actually pose some type of answering the Dodgers, not only at the plate, but also to get past some of the pitching that they have as well? I don't even want to give too much credit to, like, Kershaw and company, but I have to because they've been able to have this outstanding record at this point in time.
Yeah, and, I mean, honestly, it's the pitching staff for the Dodgers has been guys like Tony Gonsolin taking another step and Tyler Anderson and, you know, guys that we were expecting to be on the back end of that rotation. I mean, this is the best team in baseball record-wise, we know. But come into October, and you have guys like, you know, DeGrom and Scherzer from New York and Nola and Wheeler from the Phillies. I mean, these are going to be these are some frontline pitchers, and these guys can pitch. They definitely have to be considered the favorites, obviously, with that team that they've been able to put together in that roster. But, you know, the old adage is good pitching beats good hitting most times. And, I mean, you just saw it again yesterday. They knocked Sandy Alcantara around the first time I saw him a week or so ago in L.A., but he got his revenge last night. Sandy Alcantara, I think you just read his record, 12-6, but his ERA is in the low twos, maybe 2.13, 2.15, something like that. So, you know, once again, good pitching beat that good hitting. So I think that, I mean, the Dodgers would have to be considered the favorite, but what's been interesting is, you know, early in the year, it looked like they were all kind of playing around over 500 for a while, and it looked like that West might be the best division in the league. And now it's just them and the Padres, and the Padres are still, what did you say, 18 and a half back or something? You know what I mean? So that's a one-horse race. The Dodgers roster is, you know, there's some guys that are starting to get hot that hadn't early in the year. You know, they definitely have to be the favorites, but, you know, like I said, with that Mets pitching and with what Philly and Atlanta line up to, like, I think that those teams, you know, definitely have a shot at them in the postseason.
Okay, to me, just to try to answer this question quickly so I can get past it and get to some other things, I think it's the Cardinals and the Mets that pose a threat to the Dodgers. More than likely to me, though, I think it's the Mets that probably will end up facing the Dodgers in New York and L.A. It just sounds good. But St. Louis has actually been able to turn this thing around, I want to say, as the summer came closer to the end of the summer. I want to say like July till now, the Cardinals have definitely turned this around. They are all hitting well, and what would be a proper send-off. I like the guy, so I can't even act like I'm trying to hide from it, for Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols has been able to bring a championship or so back to St. Louis, and he's chasing 700. I feel like he's going to get there. I couldn't see him falling short in the 690s. If he could get to 700, that would be great. I just want to see how far he can get, because he's going to probably fall short of the 714 that Babe Ruth has. But just for him to be in the comfort of the 700, it'll be Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, and Babe Ruth. If he could get there, it's only the three or four of them if Albert gets there. More than likely, I feel like he'll get there. They're going to start lofting them pitches. I'm sorry. I got to say that. I'm going to say that myself because I like Albert Pujols. I would be the pitcher up there trying to loft him that pitch so I could be the 700th, you know, home run to go down in history with him. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how I feel like this is going to end up going. They're not going to make him earn it. Because all of a sudden now he's hitting bombs, especially while this team is doing good together in the midst of that. So, rightfully so, great guy. Doesn't talk too much. If I hit like him, I would be talking crap, but he doesn't. But I think that this would be great if the Cardinals could put this type of work in to threaten the Dodgers and actually knock them off for the National League. It'd be an incredible storybook ending for Albert Pujols, let alone all of the stuff that he had to go through from leaving St. Louis, going to Anaheim, then going to that Dodger team, and then coming back to St. Louis. It would be interesting if he could make that happen, but we will see as we have only a few more weeks left of Major League Baseball. Okay, so anything else you'd like to add before I do get away with that? I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I didn't even close out properly.
No, you're good. I mean, you're right. The Cardinals have been playing well, and Pujols kind of rejuvenated, but like I said, I think it'll be Mets or Braves that pose the biggest threat to the Dodgers. You said Mets and Cardinals, so we'll see. I expect a Mets Dodgers LCS this year, though, and it'll be interesting. So we'll see what happens, and you know, we'll keep updating as we keep brunching throughout the next couple months. But yeah, let's move on. I'm ready.
Okay, so quickly, I want to do this quick for NBA news. There's not much there for me. I'm still watching closely what the Lakers do because Jeannie Buss has made a statement. She mentioned every player on the Los Angeles Lakers except Russell Westbrook, and this is with the addition of Patrick Beverley. So this is looking like they are trying to get rid of Russell Westbrook. That's one thing to try to put the question mark around what they're going to do in the next coming month or so because the season is starting in October. So they're going to have to make this happen soon unless they're going to open up and have Russell there. But it's going to look interesting with Patrick Beverley and Russell together, and they both have a beef. And with Patrick Beverley calling Russ out, I don't even want to get too much into that because I know I feel I'll get long in the tooth. But there's some other news in the NBA that it draws question. Danilo Gallinari, the new member of the Boston Celtics, is playing overseas with the Italian team. He tears his meniscus. I know that this may be a short recovery process, but still this is something interesting because he is in his latter part of his 30s right now. Healing is a question that is going to be in front of him, and he's not that mobile already, even though he's a 6'10", 6'11", type of guy that can shoot the ball. Nevertheless, he's out with a tear playing with Italy, so he's going to be done until I guess we hear more about the injury process. That's pretty much that I have on the NBA right now. I just know that caught my radar as I fall into the NFL because at least I wanted to save the proper amount in front of the NFL while we're in the last week of the preseason and people fighting to make this 53-man roster as it has to be trimmed down as of, I think, tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. But nevertheless, Tom Brady's been out. He comes back. He has an impressive series. A lot of people are gawking at it. I'm like, this is Tom Brady. Like, what do you expect? Like, he's going to be good out there on the field. Unless he came out there and threw some questionable passes or he threw a pick six or something, it's like it's going to be him. But, Brady, he looks great coming back out there on the field. It's Tom Brady. Like, what do you want him to do? You want him to be bad all of a sudden? Like, this is the same thing that people are saying he's supposed to hit some cliff and we haven't seen it. Like, Brady could probably play till he's 48 if he wants to, but we don't want to see him out there at 48 years old. He tried to retire this year, and Ronaldo basically said, are you done? And he came back, he's playing football. And I guess it's some issues within personal reasons. I only want to say family, so on and so forth. He had personal reasons that he stayed away from the organization. He came back and played against the Colts and had an interesting series, and we'll go from there. But we've seen that. The Colts end up taking care of business in that matchup also. We have some teams that I do want to pay attention to. A lot of people aren't really into the preseason scenario, shall I say. But the Ravens have won their third straight, 3-0 on the season, right? They have won their 25th straight preseason game since 2015.
Yeah, they never lose in the preseason anymore. Yeah.
And since 2015, they have not lost. This is the question that I have. It's like, okay, when does this turn over into the season? Lamar Jackson is the one that a lot of people that I'm around or associate with or talk to about the sport. Everybody's like, oh, well, he can't throw, and, oh, his contract, it shouldn't be that big, so on and so forth. Well, he isn't out there getting it done, but his team is right now. And if they have the players out there to make it happen in the preseason, this turnover has to happen in the season. So you guys, to me, as a Ravens, I feel like you guys should be no less than 500. To be fair. So 9-8 or better is where you guys should be if you guys are taking care of business on all levels, from the 90-man roster to when you cut it down to however many are left to the 53. Everybody's ready. They know what it's like to win. And Harbaugh, enough is enough for you to go out there and say, oh, well, receivers don't want to come out here and play with Lamar. You should put receivers out there to help him, because it's just him and Mark Andrews at the end of the day when you guys go out there and start the situation. I mean, Duvernay is out there. Bateman is another name that we throw out there. But, like, are we looking at these guys to be postseason playoff threats ready for Baltimore? We have to see. We have to see. But, again, another question that's in front of the Ravens, too, is Lamar Jackson has to remain healthy. And this is the first season that he's gotten injured. So that's not a consistent question that I do have in front of him, to be fair. But they have to be fair to him also, because I feel like they're waiting for him to get injured to be like, aha, we're not going to pay you. And it's like, that's not right. I don't like that. But nevertheless, they win their matchup up against the Commanders 17-15 to round out their third win, and they win 25 straight games since 2015. Let me do this the right way because I'm in the bottom of the scores. The Broncos win their matchup 23-13 up against the Vikings. They're 2-1 on the season. The Vikings are 0-3 out of the preseason. But I still feel like they're going to be a threat, so I don't want to weigh too much on the Vikings. I think they're trying to do this as safe as possible. Don't risk any injuries. The Colts, like I said, won their matchup up against the Buccaneers 27-10. The Dolphins blow out. Now, this is interesting. I'm glad I'm here. The Dolphins blow out the Eagles 48-10, right? I know this is preseason, but this is very interesting, Philadelphia. I know that this isn't going to be how you guys look going throughout the season. A lot of people peg the Eagles to be one of the forefront runners. I don't want to say winners, but the forefront runners for the NFC East. But this looms a question. If the defense is ready, if the speed is going to be a threat to them, what do they do? The Eagles have to get out of their own way. The Dolphins are 2-1 on the preseason. The Eagles are 1-2 on the preseason. The Titans win their matchup up against the Cardinals 26-23. Titans are 2-1. The Cardinals are 1-2 to round out the preseason. The Bears win their matchup up against the Browns 21-20. Interesting matchup. Justin Fields has 156 yards passing on 14-16 attempts with 3 touchdowns thrown. Very impressive. He said that he, in the interview that he had after the game, he said, like, we feel like we're getting there. We're turning the corner. So maybe this may happen earlier than expected. I still feel like they may need some consistency together. But this is all a new system, new coach, new everything. So we will see if the Bears do have that consistency. They are 3-0 in the postseason approaching the regular season. Let's see if that carries over. And the Browns are 1-2 leaving the preseason. The Bengals win their matchup up against the Rams 16-7. 1-2 on the postseason, both of these teams. There has been talks about what the Rams are going to do. They said they're going to handle this internally instead of letting the NFL handle this with the Aaron Donald helmet swinging situation. I'm not going to lie. I do love this guy as a player, but the tenacity of the way he was doing that, they may have to sit him down. I don't know how many games they are, but that that's a bad sight to see. While people are there, fans are there, everybody's watching him go crazy. He's a champion at this point in time, but nevertheless, they don't treat anybody no different, including Tom Brady, including Benjamin Roethlisberger. So they, I want to see what the Rams do. I want to see what they do. I'm on pins and needles on this one. The Falcons win their matchup up against the Jaguars 28-12. Interesting enough, the Jaguars are 0-4, one of the only teams to play four games in the postseason. The Falcons are 2-1, rounding out this situation. They've been doing their thing. A lot of people think Atlanta's not going to do well. I feel like they're going to shock teams. I don't want to say they have a shocking season, but they're going to be games that they win that people don't expect the Falcons to come out with. So watch out for the Falcons. They at least pull off some. I'm not going to say 9 or 10 wins. I don't think that's going to happen. But their over-under last year was 8, and they fell right short of 7. And if it was Matt Ryan and Mariota and Ritter are the guys to get the job done, I don't know. We'll see how that pans out. The other team that played four games in this postseason was the Las Vegas Raiders. They beat the Patriots in Vegas 23-6. Interesting enough, there's been so much looming around with Belichick and McDaniel taking care of business up against the defense. But the one thing that I want to say 3% tied into the situation is Matt Patricia is the talk of the town up here in the New England area, and how he's been able to find his way back into this organization and be one of the callers up here, and he's not looking good, and players not being ready up to par for what the Patriots are. So we will see if this resonates into the freaking regular season, if Patricia is able to get away with this. But he's been hiding in the shadows for far too long, so now he's got to come to the forefront and admit some of this stuff that's happening, even while he's in the evil empire, a.k.a. Patriots way. The Saints win their matchup up against the Chargers 27-10 in the Superdome, and this was on Friday, actually. Covering these games with the Raiders and the Patriots also, and the Saints took care of business up against the Chargers also, 27-10. Chase Daniels with 10 for 11 passing with 113 yards, and Ian Book led this game in rushing, 7 carries and 50 yards. So he was running the ball, and Callaway receiving led the way, 4 catches for 65 yards for the New Orleans Saints, and this was on Friday. Also, the Seahawks and the Cowboys actually got into an interesting matchup, 27-26. The Seahawks had the lead for a good portion of the game. The Cowboys turned this around late, third and fourth quarter, put it together to get the win. The third-string quarterback for the Seahawks had a series of turnovers back-to-back-to-back. He threw a pick, and he also fumbled the ball as well to give the game to the Cowboys in Jerry's World. The Cowboys finished the preseason 2-1. The Seahawks are 0-3. Hopefully this doesn't push into the regular season, but I don't really see Drew Lock or Geno Smith carrying this team to be big-time relevant in the NFC, let alone the NFC West, because I don't feel like they're better than any team the way that they're constructed right now. I feel like management and Pete Carroll led this team the wrong way while Pete Carroll is getting older. He's 71 as of September coming up, so I don't know how long he'll be with the organization, but we will see. I don't want to put too much of a window on him. And the Panthers shut out the Buffalo Bills 21-0 in Carolina. I don't want to hang too much of this on the Bills because I feel like the Bills will be way better than this, but the Bills are 2-1 on the postseason. The Panthers are 2-1 also. In saying this, Baker Mayfield has also been noted as the starter for the Panthers. Sam Darnold has also gone down with an injury as well. I feel bad about Darnold at this point in time. I really don't know if he ever gets to start again in the NFL unless somebody gets injured. I don't think he's going to earn a starting job anywhere. The Carolina Panthers had him there. He went to start off the season last year, 5-0. McCaffrey goes down. He has to man the ship, and it just completely went downhill. Baker Mayfield has so many things going on in Cleveland. He comes in there and takes this guy's job. I've been saying this since Darnold's junior year in USC. They were hyping him heavily, and he stares down his receivers, and it's been happening from college to the Jets to now the Panthers, and he can't hang on to it. He probably could go to a team like the Texans. I don't know if he could outplay like a Davis Mills or whatever. There are teams that may need a quarterback, but I don't think Sam Darnold will be a guy that we see as a starter, naturally have a job unless somebody's injured. I don't see it anymore, especially with Baker coming to take his job in months. To round out the situation for the Thursday games, the Chiefs beat the Packers 17-10. The Chiefs are 2-1. The Packers are 1-2 on the season, or the preseason, excuse me. And the Texans beat the Niners 17-0. They shut the Niners out. The Texans are 3-0 on the preseason, and the Niners are 2-1 to round out this preseason run for the 49ers. Mike, anything that you want to discuss from the games covered in the scores that have been mentioned?
Yeah, so you hear me okay? I just switched to a different earbud.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
You're good.
Okay, cool.
You're good.
Cool. Thank you. So I kind of feel with Justin Fields sort of like I do about Lamar Jackson, in that I think he needs more weapons. But, you know, I've been hearing lots of good things about Fields. Stories I've been reading out of Chicago is that he really is progressing and taking a big step forward. So we sort of see that. And I'm curious to see, because I think it's a consensus right now that a lot of people are really believing that the Bears are going to be the last place team in that division, just simply because they still got a lot of work to do on that roster. But I think it would be huge for them if he can take a step forward and look like that franchise quarterback. You know, they wanted to be the smartest person in the room, Ryan Pace, when he was the GM there, former assistant in the Saints office. And he took Trubisky when you still had Deshaun Watson and Lamar sitting there. He took Trubisky, and that didn't work out so well for him, and now he doesn't have a job. But Justin Fields being able to hopefully take a step forward, I think, would be good for this organization. I think that you're right about Seattle. This is going to be a long season because they're in a very good division. They don't have the quarterback that can get it done. And I think that in some ways, Seattle's playing for that. They're playing for that draft pick. I mean, they're not going to necessarily intentionally tank, but listen, they're playing for draft position next year. I think they will probably, you know, that they'll be one of the teams looking for a franchise quarterback in the draft coming up this spring. You mentioned Atlanta earlier. I'm curious to see Atlanta and Carolina, because Carolina has a few good players on that defense. So what can they do? I still think that those are your third and fourth place teams in that NFC South. I really like the Saints roster. I think they're pretty deep across the board. So we'll see if they can get anything done this year. I know they got the coaching change, and, you know, Dennis Allen taking over there. But you got a guy, Pete Carmichael, who's, you know, learned from Sean Payton, and they pretty much have the same offense in place. So we'll see what happens there. And you're right. I mean, some of this preseason stuff we just kind of got to take with a grain of salt, because they're still trying to get things figured out roster-wise. I think they have to be by tomorrow. I think they got to be down to like 70 or 75, and there's one last wave of cuts coming up over the weekend before they have to get down to their official 53. I want to say that's how this is panning out over the next few days. So, you know, and there's always a couple of guys that, you know, don't necessarily make that team, and you'll see a few guys switch addresses, or, you know, another team that they think they got their 53, and then somebody will come available or get let go, and they're like, whoa, this guy can help us, right? So, you'll see a couple of names, notable names, over the next week that'll end up switching addresses and going to a different locker room as these final cuts come out. So just kind of, you know, now all preseason games are over, right? I mean, it's time to get these rosters pared down, and hey, man, and we'll have our first game in the NFL in about a week and a half, and then 2 weeks from today, we will be sitting here on the brunch going through all the morning action, picking the games, and getting back into the swing of a new football season, man. I'm excited.
You, and you're speaking of 53-man rosters. We'll have to worry about that right now, especially what's going on in Motor City. There's two games.
every preseason, these two have to go at it. And at the 1 o'clock start, and then at 4:30, we are on. The Detroit Lions go to the Pittsburgh Steelers, formerly known as Heinz Field. I forget the new name that they have, receiver. And he's been the one that's been impressive, not only in the games, but also in camp and in practice. He's been terrorizing the corner. They cannot D him. I want to be fair with, like, his size, but I want to say he's not one of those big receivers, but he's one of those guys that can make people miss. He's quick as ever, and he's a jump ball receiver, too, at that. So it's incredible that he's been doing this good, and they're saying that he is so good that he still may not make the team. And I'm like, no, don't do this to him, because this guy's been going off. Incredible. I think the first two games that he's played, he's had 100 yards receiving. He had, in each of them, he had 2 touchdowns against the Colts. So it's like he's been the go-to guy. He's 5'10". So he's not that tall, but he can make people miss. Been doing great in the preseason. And the guy that they said that they may beat him out for this spot is Trinity Benson and Quintez Cephas. Cephas is injured right now. So it's like, put Cephas on a list or practice squad right now while he's not able to play. And Trinity Benson has not been able to outplay Tom Kennedy for the Lions at this point in time at the receiving core. But he's the one that said, I have a chip on my shoulder, let alone Goff had like a players only, like, well, quarterback and receiver, you know, workout. He didn't invite Trinity Benson, but he invited every other receiver and tight end out there. But he didn't invite Trinity Benson. So he's like, if he left me out, I'm taking this personal. So I'm like, this chip on the shoulder may lead him onto the team, because we all know Dan Campbell is one of those player coaches that want to see people win. So I don't want this to ruin what Tom Kennedy's been able to do, because this kid has been phenomenal for the Lions. I don't want him to go to another team. I don't want to be able to go somewhere else and start causing havoc right now. I don't want to see it. And he's been scoring touchdowns at that too. But he's 5'10". He's like nipping, but he's 195 pounds. And that's what makes him special. And I didn't want to fall in love with him, but it's like more and more as I'm learning more about Dan Campbell, I knew this was going to happen, and it is happening. So hopefully he could turn this thing around. This is Jared Goff's 3rd time on Hard Knocks. He was on there 2 times with the Rams, and now it's his 3rd time with the Lions. So hopefully they could get this thing going. That's all I have for the rest of the preseason right now. There's another news situation. The punter from the Buffalo Bills, Matt Araiza. I may be breaking his name up. I'm not doing that purposely. But I feel bad on the scenario that's happening at this point in time, because he actually had a punt that went 90-plus yards. He punted from, like, the 15, and he punted it out the back of the end zone. He clearly had that spot. He wins that spot, and the next day the allegations come out about him. And it's not like I'm, you know, vowing for him to get the job, because the allegations that are against him are brutal. But nevertheless, they release him as of yesterday. So he has no job. They have no punter. They have to find a punter now. They probably will go with a kicker or somebody off the practice squad to hurry up and fill that void. The guy that they cut in place of Matt Araiza, when Matt Araiza got the job, somebody in the league already picked him up. So he's not even available at this point in time. So they're going to have to do something quick on the fly. From what I hear, there's somebody out there in the Buffalo area that used to punt for the Bills that they might be able to go after. So they are having this question mark in front of them as they approach the regular season right now. But they have no clear-cut punter at this point in time. Mike, anything that you'd like to talk about, whether the Jets or Giants matchup, the Lions and the Steelers, or the Araiza situation, before we start to get closing the brunch?
No, I mean, you know, you feel for everybody involved with all that. I mean, it's that's a tough situation. But, you know, I think they will find a punter. You know, I'm actually excited to – I loved Dan Campbell when he was in New Orleans. Being out of pocket a lot of the summer, I hadn't really got a chance to sit down and watch a lot of Hard Knocks. So what I'm going to do is when I get back to the house next week, I'm just going to binge watch it and go all the way through it. So I'm excited to be able to see all those. And I'm curious to see what guys take reps for the Steelers at the quarterback position in this game, and see how that kind of shakes out. You know, that that's a team that for the last decade plus has, you know, had their quarterback, and now you're trying to figure out what does it look like, who's going to be the quarterback for that team. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But, man, I'm just ready for get these games done and start moving towards the season.
I agree. Hopefully this pans out for everybody. And I did overlook that as the Steelers have their hands full on that quarterback situation. Mason Rudolph has the most experience within that playbook. I think Trubisky has the most experience in the NFL, but Pickett is the one that's the hometown favorite. It makes it very interesting for what Tomlin and that organization is going to do. A lot of people are saying that Pickett may end up getting the job. I think that Trubisky may end up getting the start at the start of the season unless he comes out the starting blocks bad, then they put Pickett in. I think that happens, but the Steelers have been talking to too many different teams about trying to get rid of Mason Rudolph. So I think they're trying to cut their losses on Mason Rudolph, but it wasn't even like he was that bad. He has a winning record while he's been with the Pittsburgh Steelers organization for the little bit of games that he was able to start. And when he was out there playing, he didn't have everybody at their full facility to go out there and go to war with the Steelers as well. So this is pretty interesting to see what the Steelers have going on in the middle of Pittsburgh as well. With the names that they have right now. But, again, I feel like Trubisky's going to end up getting a job. Pickett will come in if he's struggling, because it's almost the same way that Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance went at it. Jimmy Garoppolo, they were giving him a short leash. They were going to say they're going to pull him out as soon as possible, and they're going to get Trey in there, and Jimmy goes on a run and goes to the NFC Championship game. So it's like, and this is what's tough. Like, you guys draft the quarterback so high, and they can't play because the guy that's in front of them is not trying to lose their job. Who wants to lose their job to somebody just getting started? And you think that they're better, you know? So, and it'd be interesting if the 49ers decline from an NFC Championship game and Trey Lance doesn't get them to a postseason. This is something that they do have to watch out for, because they are gung-ho on him getting out there and getting the reps and learning more of the NFL. So, and this is the same makeup of what the Steelers are going through too. So we will see how this does end up panning out. Okay, so is there anything else that you'd like to address, Mike, sport-wise, NFL, NBA, basketball?
I just want to hit a couple of quick things, man. While we've been kind of vacationing this summer, Amanda Nunes got her rematch and walked away with her title again. Man, Pena has a chin, but Nunez came in better prepared, and she sort of reclaimed her title as baddest woman on the planet. And then we had another title change hands in the UFC last weekend. Leon Edwards, he was losing the majority. I mean, he was losing the fight, man. And he caught Usman with a kick in the fifth round, knocked him out. And so, that's twice they'll probably end up running it back and making that a trilogy series between them. And I think that there's talk that Leon Edwards may head a card at Wembley Stadium in London. And so that Usman may have to make that trip across the pond to try to go get that title back. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how that pans out. But so we've had a couple of title changes in the UFC and seen some interesting fights there. And now they're also talking about working on finalizing the deal, because we don't know what's going to happen with Ngannou. So they're talking about working on finalizing a deal for the interim heavyweight bout with John Jones and Miocic. So we'll see what happens there too. Some interesting things in the fighting world going on.
Definitely the Usman situation. I know him, so that's a tough loss, especially for that being the second one. So they have to have the trilogy. What would be better without them having something like the Gotti Ward type situation, especially in the UFC also, because both of these guys are warriors, and it was a knockout kick too that ended up winning that fight. So we'll see when they make that rematch happen. I hope it is overseas. I hope it is something that Usman not only has to get the rematch, but something that he has to earn. It has to be earned, and Leon being comfortable being a champ. It can't just always be
in someone's setting, you know what I'm saying? He got to make him uncomfortable to go get it. So I definitely understand that as well. There's been talks about the increase of the Errol Spence and Crawford fight happening, so we'll see how that ends up happening soon. Hopefully that materializes as well. I did want to say something before we start to give the closeout. There's a BYU ban going on for the fans in BYU for volleyball, women's volleyball. There is a black player that they were playing up against, BYU was playing up against, and the whole crowd was screaming racial slurs to this young lady, woman, however you want to pronounce it. I feel horrible that this is still going on in 2022, and I do want to recognize that now. Stop it. Enough. And I get that area of the country still has that going on out there in, like, Utah and Wyoming and Colorado, them areas is like that. But come on, enough. Enough. It's sickening. Okay, I don't want to hang too much of my hat on that. It's disgusting because I read that today, and I did want to cover that. I feel sorry for that young lady. Do what you have to do. Persevere through these situations. We all have to fight a battle one way or another. Okay, so, Mike, I need a plug. Close out anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the brunch.
Yeah, man, the first plug is always for you, man. I mean, without you, I wouldn't be here, man. I always enjoy chopping up with you on Sunday mornings. One of the highlights of my week, for sure. Come check out the barbershop on Clubhouse. We're over 13,000 now, continuing to grow. Have rooms mostly every day. You can find us in there at some point. Just chopping up, talking sports, talking life, lots of different issues. So come by, check out the barbershop on Clubhouse. Check out everything we're doing there. The blogs, we're starting to get articles back up on sportscitychefs.com. Season previews, fantasy previews. We're bringing the football show back this week on Tuesday. We got the Callers Cookout on Wednesday. Good versus evil. We're good versus the villain. We're good always wins. Come check that out as well. Check out our website. You can also listen to us on all your smart speakers and all those devices too. All you got to do is say play Sports City Chefs, and we'll be coming through into your home. So thanks for everybody for listening to us and checking out what we do, man. And until we meet again, laissez les bon temps rouler, my brother.
Y'all already heard the French or the Creole or however you want to say it. I'm hyped. I can't wait to get in front of a TV in the next, let me be fair, I'll just say 4.5 hours. I got 4.5 hours to wait. Even though I'm going to watch the Jets-Giants game, I probably would have probably got an invite to go to that game, but I didn't want to go see that anymore. I just seen the Jets earlier this week. I'm not watching them preseason no more. I'm stunned and waiting for the Lions-Steelers game to go down. I want to see the Steelers quarterback battle. And the Lions have a receiver battle going on, so it's going to be crazy. This game is going to literally be fun to watch. I'm so thrilled to see a preseason game, and I'm not even that type of guy, so I'm ready to make this thing happen. You already know how this go down, Sports City, man. SportsCityChefs.com. Continue to check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. We'll be back here, like he said, Tuesday with the football show opening up with Sirius and company, and we'll be right back here with the grill lit up with the villain and yours truly, Timeless. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again, and if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, chefs, chefs, sports city, chefs, chefs, sports. Sports City, chefs, kaboom, Sports City chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon, they well in tune, blown like a flower in June, Superman vs. MF Doom, the clouds loom, so tell a friend it's the Sports City chefs again, pay attention, tune in, we on the set again, Sports City, chefs, chefs, Sports City, chefs, chefs.
Woo! Connecticut.